We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 2nd of February 2018. And I'm Jamie Veitch, your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we are broadcasting live from the Sheffield Live studio in the Showroom Workstation building in the centre of Sheffield. We're going out on FM radio. We're going out online too. However you're listening, the programme will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. And of course, talking about podcasts. If you missed last week's programme, it's still there up on the Sheffield Live website. And the programme featured research from global consultancy McKinsey & Co. They examined over 1,000 companies across 12 countries, and they found that firms that are in the top quarter for gender diversity are 21% more likely to enjoy above average profitability. They also found that companies in the top quartile for ethnic diversity are 33% more likely to see higher than average profits than companies in the lowest quartile. So some fascinating research that we talked about in last Friday's programme. And of course, you can get the podcast of that on the Sheffield Live website. Go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and you'll be able to find the programme from last week. Whilst you're there, you can also enjoy a host of exciting music programmes and much, much more. Whatever music you like, there's something to discover on the Sheffield Live website. Anyway, that was last week. What about today? Well, I'm really, really pleased that in the studio with me today, we have engineer, STEMinist, and a promoter of inclusive skill building, Kisha Bradley. She's here to talk about girls with drills and Brightbox and much, much more. Also in the studio, Darren Chowings is here to talk about the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network. So exciting news. But before we turn to our guests, what else has been going on in business? What else has been going on in social enterprise this week? Well, first of all, the government has been urged to change the law on sexual harassment to protect workers. And a committee hearing this week, suggestions for extending time limit for claims and reinstating employer questionnaires, lowering costs and strengthening sanctions were made to MPs. This was at the Women and Equalities Committee, which is chaired now by Maria Miller, the MP. And a heated session covered sexual harassment of women and girls in public places. And also looked at proposals, including mandatory workplace risk assessments to safeguard against sexual harassment and manager training too, to change work cultures and to encourage the reporting of harassment as well. And the CBI, the Employers Forum for Large Businesses, has been involved too. Neil Carberry, who is the CBI's Managing Director of People and Infrastructure, was also on the panel. And he said that he believed that most employers regarded their duty of care as important, but that it should extend to harassment to create an environment where reporting is encouraged. He also added that there is a lot of harassment and it is of deep concern to CBI members that harassment goes unreported. Underlying this, according to Carberry, is that business is still too male and that leaves corners where harassment can go on. And the panel discussed significant shortcomings in the current legal framework, even though the current legal framework does cover some remedies for sexual harassment. They said there are significant shortcomings. So many recommendations made there. And of course, the CIPD, Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development, have been involved too. Worth keeping an eye on this, because the panel involved heated discussion, recommendations made. Where this goes, well, we'll cover it, of course, as we hear more and more. What's been going on in your business, your social enterprise this week? Have you been doing something innovative, something different, something that you think deserves attention? Well, if you have, you can get in touch with the programme, because we're always interested in hearing from you. So if you've achieved a major goal, if you've done something new, something different, or if you actually want to comment on what's going on in business and social enterprise, then get in touch. Email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text to 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. Because whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer or an employee or self-employed, we're always really keen to hear your views. Put yourself, someone else forward to be on the programme, or simply get in touch with a comment. It can be anonymous if you want. And I have had a couple of comments from listeners last week regarding outsourcing and Carillion. We'll be reading those out later. So don't forget, get in touch, and always keen to hear from you. I think, though, it's about time that we turn to our studio guests. So I just want to say good morning to Keisha and Darren. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks both very much for coming in. And it's great to welcome you to the studio. So we're going to be talking, Keisha, with you about your work in Girls with Drills. And I've got lots of questions for you. What is a STEMinist and how are you promoting inclusive skill building? But we're going to turn to you in just a few moments. Before we do that, I just want to bring Darren on the show because regular listeners and anyone who tuned in last week will have heard the news about Sheffield and the announcement that I made that Sheffield is now an official social enterprise city. So tremendous news. And I know that a huge amount of work has gone into that. But Darren, you've joined us on the show today to actually talk about what that means. So welcome and good morning.
Yes, hello. Hello, Jamie. So, so my name is Darren Challings. I'm the chair of the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network.
Yep.
And we have been working on a bid for Sheffield to be recognised formally by SE UK as a social enterprise city and a place where some really exciting things are going on and social enterprise is thriving.
Yes.
So we have relied on an exciting and proactive stakeholder group that can drive that forward. So our stakeholder group is made up of some key players within the city. Those include both universities, Business Sheffield, Sheffield Chamber of Commerce. We have the LEP, so the Local Enterprise Partnership involved, Social Enterprise Exchange, the RDF-funded programme. Absolutely loads. And because we've got that support in place, it means that we can go ahead and start celebrating more formally what we're doing in Sheffield. You know, it's already been recognised, but this way there is a more cohesive way of collecting that data and celebrating it as one whole for the city.
Tremendous. So there's a lot in there, and you talked about a wide range of stakeholders, a diverse range of stakeholders representing different groups, from business to university to the private sector to the voluntary and community sector. And you talked about recognition from SE UK. So I just want to unpack SE UK, Social Enterprise UK, as a national organisation that champions social enterprise in the United Kingdom. So their recognition of this is really, really important in terms of Sheffield being recognised for the work that is going on by social enterprises and their partners here.
Yeah, certainly. So the Places programme started around 2014, and there were a number of cities already lined up, and boroughs and so forth that were already doing some great stuff, and SE UK wanted a framework to support that.
Yeah.
So working directly with those, we're now amongst some fantastic places across the country. Those include Plymouth as a social enterprise city,
yes,
Croydon as a borough, and also Veneto, which is an international Italian place. So they have an eye on celebrating European social enterprise as well. For listeners, they're probably wondering what makes a social enterprise place. You know, is it just a little award that can be obtained by anyone? Well, no, a significant amount of work has gone into mapping what exists here in Sheffield. We did a load of case studies. We understood the economic impact that it does create here. And we had to prove that there was significant social enterprise activity, and we had to establish a significant stakeholder group to drive that forward.
Yes.
So that is where a lot of the work has gone, and we've now got a year from now to report and analyse on a number of different aims, and then continue that status for years to come, hopefully.
For years to come, indeed. And you mentioned some other places in the UK and internationally that have been recognised before, and Sheffield now has done so too. I'm really interested in the fact that not only a massive amount of work has gone into it in terms of pulling together a stakeholder group, and that that group is diverse too, but the recognition and the mapping that you've done, because you talked about the impact that social enterprises have. And I've seen stats on a national level that have demonstrated that the fastest growing social enterprises are creating jobs more rapidly than the fastest growing private sector organisations. And did anything come up in the mapping that was surprising, revelationary, really interesting? There must be a lot of data that was collected.
Yeah, so from my perspective, working on the network, it's not a surprise to me because, I'm amongst it. But often when I mention to people that the economic contribution by the third sector is higher than the car industry, for instance, is always a surprise. Yes. it's shocking when people realise that.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I'm sorry to interrupt, because as you say, it isn't necessarily surprising to you because of your work with the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network. And as, of course, this is one of many hats of yours, and you're, like many people involved in the network, there's huge amounts of voluntary work going into this. But as you say, it's not necessarily a surprise to you because you're embedded in it, but it's a kind of stat that is a surprise to people when you say to people that the contribution to the city is higher than that of car industry. People start to sit up and take notice. So then again, perhaps any other stats that are particularly revelatory when you tell them to other people, anything else come up?
So I'd like to kind of turn to stats related to places in some respects. So with the places scheme, the actual reach of it so far has been in excess of 6.5 million people.
Mm-hmm.
So the social enterprises that are being supported have a breadth of activity they're doing, and the impact is spread across around 6.5 million people, which is really, really exciting.
Yeah.
In terms of statistics here, our case studies range from smaller social enterprises to those that were turning over millions each year.
Yes.
And I think when we publish that kind of report later this year, one of the aims of this PLACE programme and what we're trying to do is to celebrate and show off the capability of those businesses.
Yes.
Because you'll know this, but social enterprises got a stigma that everyone is volunteering in that business and that they can't make profit. We're trying to change that, trying to remind people that social business and social enterprise is about creating impact and value, community change, and being able to regenerate communities and having one eye on profit. Making and making sure that it's sustainable, they go hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely. And Social Enterprise UK will define a social enterprise as something that trades and that creates a surplus. The idea that profit is in some way bad, it's more is a complete misnomer, isn't it? It's more about what an organisation does with that profit and whether that creates value in its community. Well, that's a geographical community, which it very often is, and social enterprises creating wealth in some of the most deprived areas in the UK, or whether it's a community of interest in terms of supporting people. So it's you're challenging some perceptions too, and I've heard it as well occasionally from people saying, oh yeah, social enterprise, yeah, they support one salary or no salaries, load of volunteers, but actually no, they are creating jobs, good jobs, and creating value. And and this isn't just you or me saying this either. Even the NatWest SE 100 index demonstrates the jobs being created by social enterprises. So fascinating stuff. Yeah. And
it's also the number, you're looking at 80,000 plus now, I think, in the UK alone. Sheffield, we currently have around 300 members to our network and growing. And one of the aims of the PLACE programme is to solidify and maintain a sustainable network for Sheffield and its social enterprises. So we're looking to do that. I'd like to mention as well, earlier on, you'd said that the network itself is run by a few people. That is completely voluntary.
Yes.
So yeah. We all have different jobs across universities and variety, you know, a lot are actually working in social enterprises themselves. And voluntarily, we try to drive that membership, and it's now being monetized so that it can be sustainable in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And so ssen.org.uk for details. And I know from having gone to many of your events that you get to meet some fascinating social entrepreneurs, and of course people support one another too. So I wanted to just ask a little bit more about the network itself, and what you would encourage people to do, which of course is probably to go to the website, yes. Sign up and join. Is that the biggest call to action today?
So I guess so, yeah. So to sign up is quite easily, it's ssen.org.uk/join, and it takes only 5 minutes. There are both free and incredibly affordable options there. But because we are a membership-based local support network, everyone getting involved in that network is bringing something different. We have peer-to-peer support groups. We provide masterclasses. You'll know yourself, Jamie, from delivering something yourself earlier this week on public sector tendering and understanding the Social Value Act more in depth. We the network has all of that as well. So a call to action is to be mindful of what the centre are doing, and to promote and share the news about Sheffield being a social enterprise city. You know,
yes.
It is really exciting, and we're very proud of it.
It is really exciting, and I think you should be very proud of it. And great for the network, and great for the social enterprises in the city. And Sheffield Live mentioned as an example of a social enterprise here, alongside Zest, Fusion Cafe, and many, many more. So congratulations, and well done for pulling this together and working with a great stakeholder group, Darren, and onwards indeed. So thanks for coming in today, and let's just put a call to action then. Join SSEN at ssen.org.uk. Thank you
very much.
So this is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme, with me, Jamie Veitch. Get in touch, be on the show, put yourself or someone else forward to be a guest on the programme. Email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, send a text 07 904 272 200. Find me on Twitter, find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. You can find our guests on Twitter too. SSEN, Sheffield Social Enterprise Network, has a Twitter account, and so does my next guest. And really, really pleased that she's come in today. Kisha Bradley, engineer, STEMinist, promoter of inclusive skill building. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for coming in. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I've had my coffee, and now I'm ready to talk to you this morning and everyone out there. So
excellent. Yeah. Super duper. Well, I've had my coffee too, so... maybe not quite enough. I'm not as hyper as normal on a Friday, but hey.
I think I've had too much, so forgive me for talking too much.
So tell me, Kisha, first of all, what's a STEMinist? Because I'd like you to define it in, you know, what does it mean to you?
So first, STEM is science, technology, engineering, and maths.
Yep.
And I'm more of a fan of STEAM, which just add arts in there so that people can use STEM.
Yeah.
And then STEMinist is a play on feminist, which is about being inclusive, not just of women, but of minorities and men and people with disability and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So I would consider myself a STEMinist because I'd like STEM to be more diverse, because with diverse STEM, we have diverse innovation and everyone wins.
Yeah.
So that's what STEMinist means to me.
Great stuff. Okay. And you talk about being a promoter of inclusive skill building on your Twitter bio, and you're an engineer too. So, so your background, your educational career history, engineer, where did you study and what do you do?
Yeah. So I studied engineering in the US at a small private university called Rose Holman. Most people probably haven't heard of it. And there is when it really came to light for me that women in general and minorities don't study engineering. And if they do, a lot of times they'll start from a different place because they maybe weren't encouraged at a younger age. In fact, I wasn't encouraged. I was I remember when I decided to go to Rose Holman, which is known for engineering, one of my teachers said, "Oh, you won't last a week there." And so that was the first kind of sign to me that.
Isn't that horrifying?
Yeah, and yeah. I didn't understand what he meant by that. I thought it was just, it'll be really challenging and difficult. And when I got there, I thought, oh, I've got to prove everyone wrong. So I took it on as a challenge. And I realized sometimes, my very first class, it was a physics lab. And there were 30 people in the room, and I was the only woman. So that was a real eye opener. And I struggled a lot with spatial awareness, which is when you look at something in 2D and then you look at it in 3D and kind of trying to translate that in your mind of how it would look in the other aspect, if that makes sense. And I really, really struggled, and there weren't structures there to help me catch up because I didn't play with Lego and Kinects and toys like that growing up, because girls were more encouraged to play with Barbie dolls and kitchen and, you know, I had a fake little vacuum that I ran around the house with. And then my brother had this giant Kinex roller coaster that I was eyeing up constantly, and he left it in the box for years. And I thought, can I please build that? But I didn't want to be a boy, quote unquote. So
this is really interesting. And it could be that your brother was eyeing up your toys as well and wishing that he was able to play with them.
I think he was. He's more of a nurturing. I am nurturing. I'm nice. But I think he's more than I am.
Yeah. So. Well, this isn't necessarily an either or.
Yeah. And,
So that's a really interesting description of your experience also, and how from a very early stage, toys are given to people, assigned to people almost because of gender assumptions.
Exactly.
So you studied in the US. Now you've talked about your initial perhaps shock on going to the university. What happens next?
So I had a few internships, and you know, there are all these. They're not mean or no one has bad intentions, but there are always these little comments all along the way and all of my jobs that kind of just added up. And I thought, someone has to do something about this. We need to change the workplace culture. Yeah. And that's one step. And I think there are massive initiatives happening right now that are, you know, taking the small steps needed to be taken in order to make women and minorities feel welcomed in the workplace. But an area where we could do more work is early intervention and do that skill building at a young age and building confidence and helping people gain those problem solving skills that they really need starting early on, because that's when spatial awareness is developed, is in those early years.
Right. So, okay. So you've identified a need and even an opportunity as well in terms of early intervention. Yes. Let's fast forward to the now and to the recent history, if you like, last year. You and Ruth Amos. Amos has been on this program in the past as well. But you and Ruth Amos got together and you have a business, a social enterprise, Brightbox Toys, that has actually won at Sheffield Soup. Soup, something we've talked about on this program many times. Penny Raven has been on the show. But you also led a campaign last year, hashtag Girls With Drills. Not only a hashtag, there were clothes, T-shirts and so on. Well, I'll tell you what. Pardon me to talk about it. Can you tell me one more?
So I started Brightbox February, so it's almost a year old. Brightbox February last year, and it started out as Bright Toys. Now it's Brightbox. And I went to Sheffield Soup to not only ask for a bit of funding, but more to get the community involved and get their support and kind of hear their thoughts on it, which is massive in Sheffield Soup. It's a great place to go and get great feedback and community support and build that kind of community that you need to start a social enterprise. And then when I was on the stage and I did my story, told my story, I asked the audience to imagine a girl with a drill. And that's when Ruth came up to me. She said, "We need to get more people talking about this. We have to do something with girls with drills." And that's where Ruth and I met and kind of took off with this Girls with Drills. And it started as us going for a coffee and wanting to just do something fun and get people talking about inclusive making. Because with, like I said before, with inclusive making, you get diverse workplaces and diverse innovation and everyone wins. So that's where Girls with Drills started. Just a fun project between two friends. And then we've had famous people and local people and everyone kind of get behind and support and say, yeah, actually, this is a really important thing and we need more girls with drills and other tools to have a go and get excited and be confident in using those tools.
So this is built on your own experiences, your own observations as well. And then you started Brightbox, as you say, a year ago, and then you've met with Ruth and you've developed this campaign.
Yes.
So, and the campaign ran in the run-up to Christmas, I suppose,
and,
with a hashtag on Twitter. And as you say, famous people have been involved. And just talking before the show, we're talking about notable names spreading the word about what you and Ruth are doing. So it's really touched a nerve.
Yes, it has. So we started in... We wanted to do a campaign, and there's this thing called Thunderclap. And when we started, we thought we could maybe get 20 people on our Thunderclap, and it said you have to have a minimum of 100. So we thought, okay, we'll do it over a month. And we ended up with 100 people in 3 or 4 days, which was massive. Yeah. Like, that was huge for us. And then it just got a few famous people, Simone Yerts, Colin Furtz, and Robin Ince. They all kind of followed on, and a few others. And they spread the word, and with that, we sold 100 shirts, and we've been able to fund 300 children's makerspace activities. So it's a huge like turnaround, and being able to support all those kids in deprived communities that otherwise wouldn't be able to have those informal STEM kind of workshops it's amazing, and to see the kids' faces, it's invaluable. So
it really sounds like it has been. Absolutely.
So
the campaign isn't solely awareness, and awareness is obviously important.
That's how it started.
But
it's
then had some concrete results in terms of enabling you to sell t-shirts, sweatshirts, and you're here in the studio wearing a t-shirt, Girls with Drills t-shirt. And the sale of those has actually funded work. So so you talked about workshops, maker spaces, and then this goes back to Brightbox and what you do as an organization, and the fact that you've been able to sell something to fund something, which is a model that lots of social enterprises use. So tell me more about that.
So when we set out to do it, we just wanted it to be a conversation starter. So we thought all the profits from selling the shirts will go straight back into Brightbox, and it'll fund all the materials that we need for the kids to have the maker sessions. And then it was a lot more popular than we thought it would be. And people were asking us, oh, where do I get a drill? Can you teach me how to use a drill? How do I put a shelf up? And so then we started doing workshops, because that was the next step. That's what people were asking for. So we're doing workshops at Union Street and Running with Scissors and a few other places around Sheffield, Strip the Willow. But then the workshops right now are the Brightbox Makerspace sessions are Parson Cross Library. Mm-hmm. And hopefully over the next year, we'll be rolling it out to more libraries in Sheffield so that more children in deprived areas and other children as well can access that STEM learning.
Right, brilliant. So how does a workshop run? I mean, how long is a workshop usually, and what happens during the course of a workshop?
So the Girls with Drills workshops, where people get to use tools and they make furniture, and a lot of that is led by people saying, this is the type of thing that I want to build, are last anywhere from 2 hours to 4 hours.
Yeah.
And they get hands-on, they use drills. The longer sessions, they get to use a miter saw and a Craig jig, which is something I just learned how to use recently, is a lot of fun. And then for the Brightbox Makerspace sessions, those are an hour. And right now, like I said, at Parson Cross Library on Tuesdays. And those involve a range of activities. And it's always the kids making something. And I set them off with a challenge.
Yes.
And then they have to take that challenge on and try to be creative. And the things they come up with are amazing.
Like,
I think, oh, this is going to be a horrible week. This is a horrible challenge. And the things that they walk away with, I'm amazed. The creativity is and imagination kids have is unbelievable.
Yes. Oh, brilliant. Sounds great fun. I bet you absolutely love this as well.
Yeah, I do. I'm glowing now.
And so in the space of, well, only just a year, it's a year ago that you set up Brightbox. Is it easy to put a number on how many children that you've worked with off the top of your head?
Yeah, it's between 800 and 900 now.
Good grief.
I haven't done the numbers for this for this year so far, but at the end of last year, we'd worked with 700 children easily, yeah.
So this is a significant impact already in the first year. And as an organisation, how are you constituted? Are you set up as a social enterprise? And what kind of model did you use to set up?
So for Brightbox, as of December 5th, we are officially a social enterprise company limited by Guarantee.
Yeah.
And then Girls with Drills, we didn't expect to take off the way it has.
No.
So it's still very much growing and in the process of deciding what it wants to become.
Yes.
So, and it's just in the past few weeks that I've decided to separate them a bit. Girls with Drills will still support Brightbox. So every session that is bought will fund a Brightbox session for a child. But they'll be separate so that adults can see the Girls with Drills stuff. And then,
yes,
kids can see the STEM and makerspace things. So
that makes a lot of sense. That's great. Now, you've talked about a few things coming up, and including Parson Cross and others. And I note on the website, woodworking, give it a crack, woodworking event, and exploration and discovery at SheFest, but sponsored by British Science Week. So you're bringing in some national partners here as well, and working with SheFest, which is something again we've covered on the radio show. Just again, what will the SheFest British Science Week event, what will that cover?
So at the British Science Week, so first, British Science Week is a week for the whole country to kind of come together and get kids and adults alike to take an interest in science and see that it's not all maths and boring chemistry, which actually chemistry is really exciting, so I shouldn't say that.
That's
the perception. So it's this one will be exploring bugs, so people could come and I'll have bugs hidden in different places, or pictures of bugs, don't worry, there won't be any spiders, hidden in different places, and you can learn about their habitat and their importance to the environment, and I might even get some that you can eat if your stomach's okay with that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we'll be using augmented reality and those different types of technology. So again, it's not just letting science sit by itself, but including the arts and technology and engineering and using them all together instead of them being isolated as one subject. And that was funded by British Science Week, so we did get a grant from them.
Yeah.
And then it's in partnership with SheFest. So again, it's about the minorities and people who normally wouldn't be encouraged to look at STEM or science, and getting them to engage with it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Superb. And details of that are up on the Brightbox Makerspace website. We're going to give out the details, the Twitter and website addresses.
That's March 10th.
In a few minutes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Super. And I note on the website, you talk about other work that you do, from community events, markets, schools events, through to birthday parties as well.
Yes.
So great, great range there. And in a birthday party, you talk about matching the birthday child's interests.
Yes.
Whether it's building robots, creating animations, or more.
Yeah. So we'll be doing, like, for the end of this month, it will be a building bookends, so you can take dinosaurs or they're old toys and kind of cut them in half and make bookends. So that's one of the sessions that they can do. But every child has different interests, so there's always something you could build. So if it is Barbie dolls or babies, then you can build like little houses for them to live in. So it's still engineering and it still applies for interests. But likewise, if they just like toolboxes, you could build a toolbox and have all their tools in it. So there are a wide range of things that kids can build and interact with that will still cater to their interests.
Yes.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That makes absolute sense. Excellent. Good. Well, there's loads more I want to ask you. And I thought that before I do, though, we'll take a break for a track of music so that we can all have a sip of coffee.
Yes.
Spot the addict here. I'm very sorry. But so what we're going to do before we return to Kisha is we'll play a track. This is Little Hurricane. And the track itself is called Trouble Ahead. We'll play that now.
We're open for business life.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. And in the studio today, I've been talking with Kisha Bradley. We've been talking about girls with drills and Brightbox. We've also been talking earlier with Darren Chowings about the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network. Now, if you've only just tuned in, then don't panic, because the podcast of today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today. And we're going to return to Kisha in just a moment or two. Before we do, a few forthcoming events that you might find really interesting, really helpful, really useful if you're running a business or a social enterprise. So on the 22nd of February, there is an Introduction to Copyright workshop that's being run by the Business and IP Centre Sheffield. And you can find out how copyright affects you and your business with their free Introduction to Copyright workshop. 22nd of February at the Business and IP Centre, Sheffield Central Library. It's going to explain the basics of copyright, duration, eligible works, key resources to access and information you need to protect and to manage your copyright. So details, registration are on Eventbrite, eventbrite.co.uk. Look up Business and IP Centre Sheffield. I'll tweet the link out to that at the end of the programme. It will be very helpful, I'm sure, to many. Now, we've been hearing a lot about China because the Prime Minister has just been to China talking about trading with China. Now, if you're a Sheffield-based business, then there is a Sheffield China Business Seminar coming up. There is one next Wednesday, 10:30 a.m. through to 11. And it's talking about what's called the Belt and Road Initiative. What is that? Well, if you want to find out, go to this seminar. It will talk about opportunities for businesses in the Northern Powerhouse and how to get involved. And Invest Sheffield has invited Mr. Jin Yu, the Minister Councillor from the Embassy of China in the UK, to give an overview of the initiative. And there will be details on what the initiative does, how you can get involved. Now, you have to get an invitation if you want to go. If you want to be invited, then email Ben, B-E-N, Huey, H-U-I, at sheffield.gov.uk. And again, there are details of that on Eventbrite. I'll tweet the link out to that event at the end of the programme so you can find out more if you are interested. Then what else? We have the Sheffield City Region Skills Shortages and Hard-to-Fill Vacancies report being launched next week. Again, that's next Wednesday, but the time for that is 7:45 a.m. through to 10 a.m. So Sheffield City Region and business experts from the region will be launching the SCR Skills Shortages and Hard-to-Fill Vacancies report. That's at the Bessemer Room at the Advanced Manufacturing Park Technology Centre. So it's based on research surveying 500 job seekers and business leaders in the region to reveal the reasons for hard-to-fill vacancies. And it makes recommendations to improve skills shortages too. So Ruth Adams, who's a Deputy MD and the Director of Strategic Corporate Affairs at Sheffield City Region, will be there on the panel, alongside Lisa Pogson, the Joint MD of Airmaster, Karen Stanfield, Sheffield Hallam University, Louisa Harrison-Walker, the MD of Benchmark Recruit. And if you want to go along to that event, free to do so, you need to register once again through Eventbrite. So again, I'll tweet the link to that at the end of the programme so you can find out more details there. So plenty going on. And I did also mention we'd had a couple of emails from listeners about outsourcing, with one listener saying that we have a situation in which we have privatised profit and socialised risk. They didn't want to give their name, but they were talking specifically about Carillion. What do you think about that? Is bidding for public sector contracts a good thing? I think many of you have something to say, so if you do, get in touch, send me an email. And if there's something else going on in business or in social enterprise that you'd like us to cover, drop us an email. So, time now to return to Kisha Bradley. Kisha.
Hello.
Hi again. Hi. So, we've been talking Brightbox, Girlswood Drills, and much, much more. And yes. Phenomenal achievements in first year of trading for your social enterprise.
Thank you. Yeah.
Really, really impressive.
Yeah.
Now, it's great to hear those achievements, but I know from personal experience and from all the social enterprises and all the businesses that I speak with, everyone faces challenges. So so I want to just ask you where you've had help and support and what have been the biggest challenges that have come up for you in the last year?
Yeah.
So I don't know whether you want to cover help and support first or challenges.
So help and support, I would say none of this would be possible without all the help and support I've received from not only individuals but also the different organizations. So a few of those are Groundworks Social Enterprise Exchange, and then the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network with Darren that we talked to earlier, and then the Evolve program at the University of Sheffield, and I've received a bit of funding from them as well. So all of those organizations have been key in mentorship and keeping me focused and going the right direction, and a lot of learning has had to be done because my background's in engineering. I did get my master's in management, but I didn't use that in a formal workplace, so I've had to do a lot of learning around, you know, marketing and business plans and finance and accounting and all that, the stuff that people don't normally get to see. They just get to see the exciting things. So it has been a massive challenge, and I would say some of that is learning when to say no, I think, and then taking on advice and what advice is, because all advice is sound and it comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
But what advice do you take, and what's good for you and what's good for your business? And
now
then
that's a really good point.
Yes. Yeah. So it all comes from good places, and it's all good advice, but you don't have to take it all. And knowing what advice you want to take and what works for you is an important thing to learn, besides all the different skills you have to, because you wear all the hats at first because at first you are the only person, or you might have a partner and you might be a few people. So until you can grow and employ more people, you have to learn all those skills for yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
But with that, it's also reaching out and getting the community involved and knowing that you're not alone in this. And if it's something that is really worth pursuing and a problem that people see, there will be people out there that will help you with it, and they will take on some of those roles. And so maybe not in your first day, but as you grow, those people will come out of the work. So just reaching out to those people and not being afraid to ask for help, I think, is huge. So with that, ask them, because your mental health matters and you need to let them take on some of those things so that you can take care of yourself and know when to turn off as well. So this has been really important for me.
That's so important, isn't it? I think, so knowing what to say no to, knowing that you can go and ask people, taking on as much advice as you can. But, if you like, taking responsibility to make the decision yourself.
Exactly.
And, the advice is offered, with, goodwill and expertise, and whether you're paying for it or whether someone else is paying for it, if it's, say, a program,
or just a friend
or whatever, you can listen to it, you can weigh it up, and you can then decide what to do, I suppose.
Great.
So that's interesting. And you talked about Evolve and winning some funding there.
Yes.
And Social Enterprise Exchange Program as well, something else we've mentioned here. So Big in terms of impact for any social enterprise, winning funding.
Yes.
Not only in terms of that can help you accelerate the growth of a business or of a social enterprise, and accelerate your plans to earn income from people paying you. But also it's a confidence boost as well when your idea
massive
gets
confidence
that.
Boost. Yeah. So a lot of times it's the advice is worth more than the money.
Yes.
But the money is a huge confidence boost, and it allows you to do a lot of other things that you wouldn't be able to do without it. So
yes, sure thing.
Yeah, definitely go out and get advice and find a mentor.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, that, I think, is phenomenally helpful. So any other challenges, I suppose, that have been that you face or that you've observed in terms of through the networks that you've joined and become a member of, and without naming other people or other social enterprises' names, yeah, we can all see that, and particularly when we get to know people, that other businesses and other social enterprises face things. What do you think are the common challenges?
So I think there are two, you can kind of categorize them into two places. And one is this, the constant learning, which, yeah, I see as, it's kind of a good challenge. So it does stop you. It doesn't really stop you from succeeding, but with the extra knowledge and learning, you can go further.
Yeah.
And then the other one is, just being able to look past the now. So you kind of, you have to look into the future and think strategically about what's going to happen maybe in 3 to 5 years, not in too much detail, but you also have to be able to think about right now and what are your priorities and what you need to do to get to that 3 to 5 year point. And I think it's difficult when you're in the day to day of it to do both at the same time. And that's something I still struggle with. So I constantly have to come back to myself and say, all right, what's the bigger picture? And what is just noise and clutter that is, would be really nice to do, but isn't important for getting the impact and the value that I need today. So it's the balance between those two. So the skill learning, that's always going to be a challenge. I think hopefully for everyone, for the rest of our lives, we're always going to be learning. And then the other one is the looking 5 years from now, but also looking right now and balancing the two.
Yes, quite. Yeah. And again, yeah, I think I've certainly observed that, and people have commented about that quite frequently on this radio show too, on the program. The finding time as well to continual professional development and skill learning and development, and as you say, the perspective change between a strategic overview, an oversight, or a strategic view, and a sort of getting engaged in the day-to-day operational responsibilities that need to be done right now.
Yeah, so, and it all comes back to that priority you're talking about. Yes. So it's taking the time to do things that will help you for the three-year plan or whatever your long-term plan is, but also getting the stuff done that needs to be done today. Yeah. So it's like, and I think that's the one I struggle with the most, is I see the 3-year plan, but I get stuck in the day to day and I do what needs to be done next instead of taking just a day a month or every few weeks or so to work on those long-term strategic things that need to be done for me to succeed. So
quite.
Yeah.
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 Well, none of us are alone with this.
No, so, yeah. No, not at all. Which is why you should join some kind of network, because then you know that those are struggles and they're going to have skills that you don't have that you can maybe do a bit of trading on without paying too much. So
that makes a lot of sense too, doesn't it? In terms of skill swaps and seeing a lot of those going on, skill swaps and mutual support networks and so on. Brilliant. So we've been talking about STEM. We've been talking about STEAM as well.
Yes, STEAM. That's my favorite. I like STEAM.
Absolutely. And inclusive skill building too.
Yes.
Vital, of course, for the businesses of today and tomorrow. And be interesting to see what comes out of the skills gap report, which is being launched next week as well for the region. Of course, Brightbox doing incredible things, and what an impact already. If you've worked with 800 or 900 young people and children, that's phenomenal. People can find out more about Brightbox, also about Girls With Drills. So we can talk Twitter, we can talk hashtags, and we can talk website. Where do you want people to go?
So both websites are having a bit of a makeover, but you can go to brightboxmakerspace.com or girlswithdrills.com. They will have a makeover in the next coming week, so I'm sorry for any inconvenience in that time. but then Facebook is always good. So on Facebook, we're Brightbox Makerspace. On Twitter, we're Brightbox Maker. And then we only use the hashtag for Girls With Drills because we think everyone should kind of have a stake in it and use the hashtag as much as possible to talk about what they're making and their experiences in making.
Yeah.
So it's just hashtag Girls With Drills.
Fantastic. Yeah. Great. So go take a look at those and follow the links through. And there are about only 3-4 t-shirts, sweatshirts left
not
for sale.
Many.
Pretty much almost sold out. So if you want to get your hands on one, then act very quickly.
Yes.
Brilliant. Okay, so take a look at the website. I'll tweet the links out as well myself to those two. And, well, I mean, Kisha Bradley, that's been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you.
So you've been listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. You'd be very welcome to get in touch. Send a note to jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Tweet me, Jamie Veitch. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter. Send a text 07904 272 200. Our guests today have been Darren Changs and Kisha Bradley. It's been a fantastically interesting show. Thank you so much to Darren and to Kisha. Thank you for listening. And thank you to Sangeeta in the studio as our sound engineer today. We'll be back on air next Friday. So tune in then, but don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live, it's our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, from 10 all the way through to noon. Before that, we're going to play out with a track of music chosen by Kisha. This is Girls Run the World, Beyoncé.
We're open for Business Live.